Obi literally would convince himself that he could do things that probably very few people could do and probably very few people should have done.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Basketball Strong Podcast. I'm Tim DeFrancesco, former LA Lakers strength and conditioning coach and doctor of physical therapy, and I'm here with my co-host, Emmy-nominated writer and author, Phil White. This podcast is not just for basketball junkies. It's for anyone who loves to hear the human stories behind great people while learning the science behind preparing your body for the court and high performance. This episode is brought to you by our friends Chris and Drew at Wear Testers. Save yourself time and money on your next pair of basketball or running shoes by checking the detailed reviews from the pros at Wear Testers. Every review talks about fit, cushion, traction, materials, and my favorite, support. I promise you, you're not going to find another shoe review source who's out there wearing the shoes and then giving you the real deal truth behind what each pair of shoes brings or doesn't bring. So get to WearTesters.com, WearTesters.com, or check out their YouTube channel for more detailed shoe reviews. Today's guest is Gary Vitti. Gary returns to us in this episode as he crushed it way back in episode number 9. If you haven't listened to that one, get back there, listen to it. Gary's a legend in the field. He's a mentor and a dear friend of mine. And he served as the head athletic trainer for 32 seasons for the LA Lakers. That means he was in charge of the sports medicine needs for the likes of Kareem, Magic, James Worthy, Shaq, Kobe, and everybody in between. Gary wrote the book called 32 Years of Titles and Tears from the Best Seat in the House. It's a collection of everything he saw sitting in that first seat that the head athletic trainer sits on the bench. It's incredible. And you've got to get your hands on this book. In today's episode, Gary tells us the behind-the-scenes story of what exactly happened and how Kobe made the comeback from the terrible ankle injury that he suffered in the 2000 NBA Finals, Lakers versus Pacers. Let's get into the conversation. Gee, what's happening out there in sunny Manhattan Beach?
Well, the sun is happening for sure. And Duke and I are happening. Okay.
I love it.
We did our morning walk on the beach and we're approaching lunchtime. So let's get this over with so Duke and I can go eat, man.
Seriously, priorities. Well, are you tapped out at this stage? You've seen enough playoff basketball or are you following the playoffs right now a little bit?
I don't hardly watch any basketball at all. What I do is almost on a daily basis, during the season, I look at the standings. Mm. And during the playoffs, I look at the schedule, which has the standings on the schedule. So I see who's playing who and you know, what the win-loss, where they are in terms of wins and losses. And, you know, I still have what I consider friends in the NBA.
Yeah,
and I root for them. So it's not necessarily any particular team as it is individuals. And so whatever team that they're on, I don't care what team. It could even be the Celtics for that matter, okay?
If wow.
That I'm friends with and I like on that team, then I'll root for them because I want my friends to do well in life. Okay?
So. I love that. Well, I want to give you and Duke time to get to lunch here. So I want to get into some of the good stuff here. And what I'm excited to have you take us into is the 2000 NBA Finals. So you have a 21-year-old Kobe, and you guys are playing the Pacers. You guys win game one in LA at the Staples Center. And then a few minutes in, as I understand it anyways, and I'll let you tell the tale, but a few minutes in, Kobe has a pretty significant ankle injury into game two. And I'd love to kind of hear what that moment was like. Were you going right out onto the floor there? Did you know immediately that was it for him? What was that like?
Yeah. Let's say this before we go into that, to give your audience kind of a feel for who we were playing. So we were a great team that hadn't won anything yet. Okay? We were a tremendous disappointment. We had Shaq, we had Kobe, we had other people on the team, Derek Fisher, Rick Fox. I mean, we were a really talented team that couldn't seem to win. And then Phil Jackson arrives. Okay? And he arrives with instant credibility. So he's already got 6 rings. He's got a $12 million contract for 5 years. He's got $60 million. So you're basically telling the players, this guy's not going anywhere. Okay?
Right.
If there's a problem, we're going to get rid of you. Okay? We're not getting rid of the coach. Okay? And it, you know, he didn't have to earn anybody's respect. He came in with it. He came in with a great staff. You know, we had Frank Hamlin, Jim Clemens, Tex Winter. We brought Chip Schaefer in, you know, who was the trainer for the Bulls, but he's my student trainer at the University of Utah.
Right.
And Chip and I went back for many, many years until we were very symbiotic in terms of how we were trained and how we could complement each other. And there you look at the Pacers team. So now the Bulls dynasty is over, okay? And the Pacers become the highest scoring team in the NBA with Reggie Miller, okay? A big guy, a really big, talented guy, Rick Smits, okay, who had knee issues, but he was still a formidable foe. I mean, the Pacers were good, and they were coached by none other than Larry Bird, right? And
sure.
So we were going into this, you know, but we were unproven, but we also, Shaq that year was just a monster. I mean, just, he was so unstoppable. I literally, every once in a while, you know, I'd have to go down to the scorer's table to check on something, a free throw, a timeout, something, right? And it would be around the time when somebody would be subbing in from the other team. You know, and
right,
even though
right.
somebody I didn't work with, but they knew who I was. They knew I was the athletic trainer for the Lakers. And they'd come and whisper. They'd be bending over toward the scorer's table, but they'd be whispering in my ear, tell me the truth. He's 400 pounds, isn't he? Because I try to move him. I can't move him. Okay? I'm running into him. It's like running into a wall. The things that other players on other teams used to say to me about Shaq were hysterical. You know what I mean?
Oh, my gosh.
He was just so big and strong and massive.
I love it.
So having said all that, I think I've kind of set the stage a little bit.
Perfect.
What was happening, okay? Because we were really talented. Now we're really well coached, but we still haven't won anything. Okay? But we have a very high degree of self-confidence because the Pacers hadn't won anything either, and they still haven't. Okay, I think the ABA.
Right.
Right. So it was these two teams that, you know, East and West, that are coming together, and you know, they had a lot of firepower on that team. And we start in L.A., and it's a 2-3-2 format. I think they changed it back last year, right?
So it's 2-3-2, I think so.
1-1 again. That started in 1985, the 2-3-2, to cut down on the east-west travel.
East-west-west.
Got it. Okay. And so we start in L.A. We win game one. Seemed like, you know, we were the dominant team, so everybody had great confidence. And so now we go into game two. And Kobe is injured early in the game, but Shaq is such a force that we end up winning game two, okay,
wow.
Without Kobe, basically. He started the game, but his minutes were negligible, and his performance at that point was pretty much negligible. Now, as you know, as an athletic trainer, sometimes it's better to be injured on the road than it is at home. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. You certainly have more facilities at home than you do on the road, but you also have a home to go to. So,
So you know,
you could say, okay, let's just sleep in the training room, but nobody does that, okay?
Right.
You know, but if you're on the road, you're basically living in the same house, you know, because you're in a hotel together, right?
Yep.
Well, think about it. Kobe gets injured. I leave the bench, okay? I go in the training room, and we start our acute care immediately. This is why acute care is so important. You get these questions all the time from the weekend warrior. I don't get it. I sprained my ankle and I was out for weeks, and you got Kobe back in 2 days. Well, because you didn't have me, forget about the 2 weeks or 6 weeks you were out. You didn't have me the first 20 seconds that you were injured,
Right.
And not just me, but somebody like me. I'm not saying that, I'm anything great, but anybody that's been trained the way you and I have been trained, you know what to do, right? And so we had acute care on Kobe right on the spot. I was right on. I brought him off the court, went in the training room, did what we had to do. Now here's the beauty. We go from the training room, instead of to our homes, we go to the airplane.
Mm.
Now we got another double-edged sword, because the pressure, even though the cabin's pressurized, right? When you fly, you swell up. I mean, ask especially old people, okay?
Right.
So we're fighting that, but we're also together, okay? And instead of him going home and then
going home,
okay? And the key is a lot of compression. Okay, so he's torn tissue, it's bleeding out inside of his body. It's got to go somewhere,
yep.
But I have a compression wrap on him, so it can't go anywhere, but it wants to. And so I always liken it to the cartoon character that hits his thumb with the hammer, and then you see the thing throbbing. That's what their ankle feels like. Okay?
Sure.
And then when they absolutely can't take it anymore, you cut that compression wrap off. You immediately start with modalities, ice, stem, whatever you're trying to do. That was my combo, ice and stem together. So, we're icing because ice does what ice does. And then the stem, we're trying to create a pumping action. So people that don't understand venous flow, which is getting blood back to the heart, back into your lymphatic system and back to the heart so it pumps back out. There is enough blood pressure to pump blood back to your heart, but really venous flow has a lot to do with muscle contraction. Back the muscle squeezes on the vein. These little valves that are shaped like this open up, the blood goes up, then they close so the blood can't go backwards. And so if you can create muscle contraction, you can get more venous flow. So if you kind of use that concept in your acute care and trying to get that stuff out of there, you can stimulate muscle contractions with electricity. Okay? And now you have all these different electromodalities, and everybody you talk to tells you that theirs is the best. And you don't feel anything. Mine's the best because you don't feel anything. It means it's the same electricity that you have in your body. Okay, maybe. Yeah, okay. so you're controlling this inflammatory response. So for your audience to understand, you have an injury which causes pain, inflammation, pain, inflammation, pain, inflammation. You're in a cycle. And so you can try to treat the pain, or you can try to treat the inflammation, or preferably you're treating both. Okay? And trying to minimize the downtime and maximize the healing time.
Right.
And so the more time you can actually be in the presence of the athlete, the better. So you put the wrap on. Okay. If you're not there when he cuts the wrap off, then that thing's going to explode.
You know?
But if you're there, you say, okay, we're going to cut the wrap off. We're immediately going to put you on ice. We're going to get some muscle stim going, get some pumping action. Okay, we're going to do this for whatever we're going to do it for.
Right.
20 minutes, maybe longer depending on the modality. The ice, probably not more than 20 minutes. And then we're going to wrap you back up again.
Okay? Well, and I never thought about that, how, like you pointed out, that was actually really great timing that you were headed out on the road.
Yes, key.
And going back a little step further, though, did you know as soon as you got back to the locker room, to the training room, that was it for that game for him? And yes. And what was his mood about that? Was he?
Yeah, well, he was angry, and he had good reason to be. And I think Jalen Rose is probably a good guy. He's certainly a great player, but there was a lot of controversy back then about kicking out.
Really?
So, yeah. So, and the team that we're playing had a player that was controversial about it on the offensive end. So if you watch the way Reggie Miller shoots, he kicks his leg out.
Right, right. Okay?
You're not supposed to do that, right? You're supposed to go straight up and straight down, okay? But then the defensive player has a responsibility to protect the offensive player in the sense that you want to come up on him to defend the shot, but you don't want to be under him because he has to have space to land, okay? It's a dirty play if you don't give him space to land. And that's what Jalen Rose did. He kicked out from under him, so Kobe didn't have a place to land. He landed on Jalen, collapsed,
wow,
writhing in pain. You know how tough, everybody knows how tough Kobe was. So if Kobe is writhing in pain, you know you got a problem. Okay?
Right.
Because he doesn't writhe in pain.
Right.
Know, like, for no reason, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, you know, couldn't walk on him, get him off the floor, you know, you take his shoe off, cut the tape off, boom, the thing starts to swell right before your eyes. And then now you go into that mode that I was saying, trying to control that inflammatory response.
Got it.
And so, you know, if you had to design a situation, this is the way you would design it, that you got hurt at home, you had all your facilities available to you acutely, and then you got on the plane, so you sat next to him on the plane, and you're working on him, you're using your hands, okay? Because, you know, as I, further into my career, I got more and more involved with manual therapy, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, we had that, call the hotel ahead of time and tell them to change my room so that it was next to Kobe's. Okay.
Wow.
You know, with like an adjoining door, and then we could go, I could go in and out of his room. You know, if we got there, your foot's throbbing at 4 a.m. You can't wake me up.
Right there.
Right. And there, I'm there, you know, 10 seconds,
wow,
I'm on it. Right. And so this was around the clock. He couldn't play in game three. Which
right,
he lost without him, and he was very doubtful for game four. Now, here's sort of what happens in these situations, that if you're doing your job right, the ankle actually looks really good, like you control the inflammatory response. And it's a bit of a detriment sometimes to the athlete, because you got them on a treatment table and people are coming in and out of the training room and they're looking at it, they're going, he ain't hurt that bad. That looks pretty good. I've had injuries and a lot more swelling than that. It's not fair to the kid because he's actually torn tissue. He still has a lot of pain, okay? It's just that the ankle looks better than it actually is. He had some discoloration, but, you know, I controlled the swelling really well with the thing. You know, once again, there's some controversy on whether you put an athlete acutely on an anti-inflammatory. You know, I can give you the pros and cons of both sides. You know, it may cause more bleeding, you know.
All these things that you're bringing up that are, you know, evidence-based or not, they're not, you know, based on being in the NBA finals either.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, this is it, right?
This
is tomorrow. And, you know, it's just, I did a podcast last week and I was trying to explain how painful it is to me to look back on the implosion of that team, because when you have an opportunity to win, you must win it because you may never, ever have the opportunity again. And we had a team for a decade that imploded in 4 years, okay? And you can't get it back. It's gone. It's you can't. It's, you know, And so what you're saying is true. So we're playing for all the marbles now. There's no tomorrow. We have months to get you well after this, but we got to get you on the floor somehow, some way. We got to get you on the floor.
Right.
Without, obviously, sacrificing or putting your career in jeopardy, because you know, you're still Kobe Bryant. You're a major asset to the team for the long term. Okay, because the kid came in when he was 17 years old in 1996. So we're only 4 years later. He's 21 years old. We consider an athlete in his prime around 27, 28 years old. He's not even close to his prime yet.
Right.
So even though it's the finals, you know, you got to be pragmatic about everything that you're doing here, the big picture, the little picture, you know, the whole thing. Okay. And so, you know, I think you got the picture that we're together now 24 hours a day. So nothing's slipping by us.
Right. And right. Are you thinking, and you have to have this conversation with Jerry West at the time, Mitch Kupchak, assistant GM, and Phil Jackson are saying to you probably, hey, what's happening? Is he ready for game three? Is he ready for game four?
Yeah. Well, game three was pretty much a no-brainer that he wasn't going to play.
Okay.
And then after that, who knew? You know, we're going to do everything that we can do. And if he can play any of the last four games, then, hey, we lucked out. Like, suppose a series goes to a seventh game. You know, can we get him on the floor?
And that game three, Gary, the Lakers lose that game, correct?
Game three, we lost.
Yeah. Yes. So that's got to factor into it somehow.
Yeah, so you're still up 2-1, okay? But you're obviously on their floor, you know, and they're nasty in Indiana. I mean, the whole Midwest thing, you know what I mean? The nice people. Yeah, they're nice until, you know, you're the enemy, you know what I mean? You're trying to take something that they want, you know, which is a trophy, and then all that nicety goes, you know. Anyway. So we're there, and now we have practice. This is after game three, before game four, day between.
Got it.
And I have, so the team is practicing, but Kobe's on the sideline with me. I'm putting traction on his foot to mobilize his cuboid, and he literally feels a pop.
Wow.
And we look at each other, and I've mobilized a lot of cuboids.
Right.
You know, and usually what I do is I mobilize it, and then I have them get off the table and walk on it, and my question's always the same. Is it better, worse, or the same?
Yeah.
Better, worse, or the same? And then, depending on their answer, you know, tells me what I'm going to do next.
Yep.
But I feel this pop. And I know he feels it too, because he has this stunned look on his face.
Wow.
And I've never felt that before. And so I didn't know what to think. So I looked at him and I said, this is either going to be really good or really bad. Okay? And he gets off the table and he takes a couple of steps and he goes, you did it.
No way. I can play.
You did it. I can play. Okay. But we didn't like let him play at that point. It's not like I taped him up and let him go to practice.
Sure.
But whatever happened, the displacement of his cuboid, I guess, and how it articulated with his navicular was the main source of his discomfort. Now, he had still torn soft tissue, okay? But he had multiple ankle sprains throughout his life. So when you really think about the controlling of the swelling and the pain that would be associated with tearing your anterior talofibular ligament, your calcaneofibular ligament, those ligaments, those lateral ligaments, he probably didn't have much ligamentous stability there anyway, okay?
Right,
he destroyed those structures, okay? And so the limiting factors generally are these things like controlling the pronation, getting the cuboid properly aligned, and if they go over far enough, if they roll their ankle in inversion far enough, you can get a bone bruise on the inside of their ankle. So they sprain the ligaments on the outside, and they're telling you that hurts, but what really hurts is the inside. And it's because those bones crunch together, and you get a bone bruise. Right? So we had all of this stuff, and so we're trying to treat it all individually, and I'm a big believer of traction mobilization. And so you're trying to put a lot of traction to try to spread those bones apart so they're not banging on each other with every step, okay? At the same time, if you're pulling traction on them and you're trying to get new cells to line up, are you pulling those fibroblasts off of each other? So it's sort of this blind therapy that you're kind of doing it by feel. And, you know, and you get a guy like Kobe who's so in tuned with his body, and he wants to know every single thing you're doing. Why are you doing this? Why? He just didn't lay on the table.
Okay? Right.
He wanted to know everything. So you better have some answers, you know what I mean? Because he's the kind of guy that said, I had enough of you. I'm going somebody else. He was that kind of guy. So anyway, we had another, 24 hours plus of therapy, and we wrapped him up and put him out on the floor for game 4. And as I remember it, Shaq, Kobe was kind of just sort of strolling along the game, doing what he could do on one foot. But then Shaq fouled out of the game. And that's when the load went to Kobe. And on one foot, he took it over, and we won game 4, which put us – and that was an overtime
game.
In overtime, okay, which put us up 3-1. Now you got to understand, the difference between 3-1 – and 2-2 on your opposing floor is night and day.
Okay?
I mean, they cannot lose. The other team cannot lose a game. They have to beat you 3 straight. Okay, where you have the luxury of losing another game.
Right.
And so as I remember it, we got destroyed actually in game 5. They beat us by 30. Something points, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but then we came back in game 6 and we finished the series. But think about it. If we had lost the game, because we got destroyed in game 5, if we had lost game 4, the series would have been over.
Seriously?
Right? Yeah, we would have been done.
Okay? Changes everything.
It changed everything. Everything. And, the one thing that I always remember that Kobe and I would talk about, and I actually wrote this in the book, that whether you like Isaiah Thomas or don't like Isaiah Thomas, whether you like the Pistons or you didn't like the, because I hated the Pistons. Hey, not all. There's some good guys. We had Buddha came back on our team, James Edwards. And I love Rick Mahorn. I never had him. But I love him. He's just such a wonderful guy, So it's hard to hate all of the Pistons. You know what I mean? And
sure.
Mike Abdenauer is such a great guy. You know what I mean? Their trainer. He's a character.
Right.
He's really a character, okay? But he's a great guy, But Isaiah was a very controversial figure. Whether you like him or not, you must respect what that man did on one ankle when they played us in 88 in the
finals.
Wow. Because I always stayed out of the other team's locker room. I was old school.
Yeah.
Pat Riley he didn't want anybody in our locker room or our training room. And as a result, I didn't go in anybody else's. You can't have it both ways. You're kicking them out of your place. Isaiah was injured. They were in L.A., and I needed to do something for Mike, so I needed to go in there, and I saw what his ankle looked like.
Really?
And then I saw how, he – watch it. You can find clips of him playing on one leg, and he lit us up on one leg.
going back to Kobe specifically, so now you have this 21-year-old who, with yourself and the coaching staff and others, makes this decision to play, and it obviously works out well. But how did his approach to that moment kind of set the stage for his for how he would handle future injuries and future adversity?
Yeah. So going back to the Isaiah Thomas thing, I'm not sure I finished that. You know, Kobe and I talked about that because Kobe was a real Lakers fan, okay, as a kid. And so he saw what Isaiah had done, and then I talked to him about it, you know, that this guy, you can do this. No one's ever terminated their career with an ankle injury. Look what Isaiah did, and, you know, and then he came back the next year and beat us for the ring in 89, wow. Right? So, you know, it's a trust and it's a confidence. And then when he actually did it, I think that was one of the major events in his athletic life that caused him to take the words can't and won't out of his lexicon and replace them with can and will. Because Kobe literally would convince himself that he could do things that probably very few people could do and probably very few people should have done, including him. Okay. But yeah, it was, on the one hand, it was great because it had him do extraordinary things. On the other hand, I had to protect him from himself because at some point he thought he could just do anything. You know what I mean? And then he didn't always understand the risk reward. All he saw was there's a risk, but look at the reward.
Right.
He saw the reward. He didn't understand the risk. You know, I'm Kobe Bryant. I can do it. You know what I mean? And if things get worse, then I'll deal with it then, you know? So, you know, he had to have a governor, and that was me, at least sometimes.
Anyway. Wow.
Sometimes even I couldn't control him, you know. Somebody asked me once, if Kobe really wanted to do something, is there anybody in the world that could stop him? And the only people that I thought at the time, and one less now, unfortunately, very sadly, is his daughters.
Wow.
Loved his daughters. And I think if one said, you know, Daddy, no, you know,
that was it.
That might have been it. Okay.
Man.
So I think, you know, only those women in his life could really stop him from doing something he really wanted to do.
So powerful.
I got in fights with him, you know, in the heat of a game.
Had to have, right? I mean,
yeah. You know, and so I remember, you know, Kobe spraining his thumb, you know, he got his thumb pulled back and it's a timeout and tape it up. I said, well, let me check it first. Tape it up. I said, so let me check it first, you know, because if he's got an unstable thumb, he's not going back out on the court, at least not on my decision.
Right.
Okay. We're going to bring him in back. We're going to call team physician. He's going to do a stress test on his thumb. My guess is if that thing opens up like a door, like it might, because there's no ligament holding those two bones together, that doctor's saying you're not going in.
Right, okay? Because of the further complications.
Now you got the doctor making the call. And so we're at, it's a timeout, right? We're fighting over this. Okay. Yeah, like two children, right? And finally I give him a slight headbutt. I headbutted Shaq once. I almost knocked myself out. Right? It was the stupidest thing to do. And his bodyguard, Jerome, told me, don't ever do that again. He's got a really hard head. So I know. But this was not like a headbutt. It was just a tap. I tapped him. I go, it's me.
Wow.
And it was like a light bulb went off. He said, okay. He put his hand out. And I did, and it was lax, but there was something there, you know? And I did, I taped him up and he went out and finished the game. You know, I had some words with Phil about it, you know, because I'm distracting his timeout. Probably never listened to what he had to say anyway. The timeout is when I did whatever he wanted to do. Okay. You know, and, you know, Phil didn't understand the magnitude of a thumb sprain compared right. to an index finger sprain. It's different. It's different. You know, going back to Kobe, you know, it's kind of a plus minus because you want this warrior mentality, but at the same time, you know what I mean? You don't want complete blinders on the guy. I mean,
you know, right. Like you said, you had to literally headbutt him out of his trance that he was in to protect him from himself in that moment.
Yeah. You know, and then you got other guys. I used to joke around sometimes, you know, like now we have Duke, the dog. Sometimes I joke with his vet. I go, "You and I have a lot in common." He goes, "Really?" Yeah, sometimes I used to feel like I was practicing veterinary medicine, you know, where you have like a dog or a cat, you know, it's, there's something wrong with them, but they couldn't tell you. Sometimes you have an athlete, they can't tell you what's wrong with them. You know what I mean? I don't know. You know, where'd you get hurt? They go over there. They point to a place on the floor instead of telling you where they got hurt, you know, which happened to me, you know what I mean, with Studio 3, 20-second timeout. So you have 20 seconds to figure out what's wrong with the guy and what you're going to do about it, right? Not just what's wrong with him. What are you going to do?
Right.
You're going to leave him in the game, okay? You're going to take him to the bench and do something there? You're going to take him in the back? Does he need an MRI? Does he need an X-ray? You know, is there something you can do right there? You saw Kobe dislocate his finger. I put it back in. I wanted to tape it. Before I could tape it, he turned around and walked away to the other end of the court before I can even grab a roll of tape, you know. You know, but then you got a guy, Sedale, you know, 20-second timeout, he's writhing in pain. If you can see the injury, if you can actually see it, you probably know a lot about it, right, because you saw it.
Right.
But if you didn't see it, you just see a guy writhing in pain, right? So you got to get a history, you know. So before you can do anything, you got to figure out what's wrong with him. So, you know, as I went out there, I said, Sedale, where'd you get hurt? He said, over there. And he pointed to a place. He pointed on the floor like, that's where I got hurt. No, where on your body did you get hurt? Right? And he couldn't answer. Ever tell you what his answer was? The no. only thing he could get out of his mouth was, G, you know, for Gary, G,
right.
My ship be broke.
That's so the
you're trying not to laugh because your player, everybody sees the guy in pain, but they can't right. hear the conversation. So you have the 20,000 people in the arena seeing it live, and then you have all the people, millions of people on TV.
Yeah.
And the guy's writhing in pain and you're laughing at him. I mean, you can't do that, right? They're like,
not a good look.
What trainer is that? What a mean guy. He's laughing yeah. at his player. You're trying not to laugh.
Oh, okay? My God.
But it's pretty funny.
You know? Right.
My ship be broke. So the only reply I had was, it your left shit or your right shit? And all he could say was left. So then I knew it was like,
now this you're getting somewhere.
Body, right? So I started looking at this side and trying to figure it out.
Oh my gosh. That's incredible. The stuff that you go through. Going back to the Kobe in the 2000 finals scenario, do you feel like how was that after game four? Because I mean, I know what an ankle looks like that is not it fully healed, or there's just not enough time for that to heal. He went out and did his best on it, but what does that look like? For him going into game five, do you feel like that impacted his effectiveness in that game five?
Well, I don't really remember.
Because
we got destroyed in game five.
Right.
I'm sure it did. You know, what we learned was that he could play.
Right? Yeah.
Because he did it.
Yeah.
Now the question is by playing, what other damage have you done?
Yeah.
You know, because if you can control the inflammatory process, your body will heal itself. It'll lay down new cells very, very quickly. Okay, fibroblastic cells, collagen, basically. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, now the couple of issues that you have with it is that when you look at, let's say, it doesn't make a difference if it's a ligament, if it's a tendon, or if it's muscle, if it's soft tissue, all those under a microscope are all in line with each other and in parallel fashion. That's the way you were born. Now you've torn that tissue, and now, you know, there needs to be a repair process. So your body's sending these new cells in. The problem is they don't come in all lined up like they were. Scar tissue lays itself down at random, okay? And so in order for it to get lined back up again, you have to load it, okay? And as you load it, then this is all theory, obviously, right?
Sure.
And so as you load it, if the load is appropriate for the healing phase, okay, then the tissue will adapt to the load, okay? Now, we're talking about an NBA game, so the load that you put on it was probably inappropriate, okay?
Right.
Of adaptation. So, you know, how much damage have you done? Are we back to square one? Are we even further back, okay? You know, or do we come out of it maybe even a little bit better than we went into it? Who knew?
Yeah.
It's an inexact science, like I've been saying.
Yep.
All you can do is you're treating the injury, but you're also treating them symptomatically. So when you ask me coming out of it and going, you know, into the next phase, I didn't know how we were going to come out of it, you know. But it couldn't have been very good because we lost game five. But I'm telling you, we lost by, I think, like 33 points. Like, it wasn't even a contest. Okay, but it gave us a chance to regroup, okay? And because of the 2-3-2 format, we're now in the hotel together 24/7.
Mm.
And that year, there were, you know how, like, Hoosier basketball is huge?
Right.
Could be wrong. It could have been a convention, but I don't think so. There was, like, some huge basketball thing going on in Indianapolis, like youth basketball, where, because they have all these arenas and gyms all over the place.
Right.
Okay, Hoosier basketball. Every hotel was sold out.
Wow.
So we ended up staying at like a resort hotel, like 20 minutes outside of Indianapolis.
Oh, wow.
So we were stranded. There was no place to go. You ate in the hotel. You drank in the hotel. You never left the hotel.
Right.
So all these sort of intangible things that you would have had to deal with if you were in Indianapolis or if you were in L.A. where you're going to separate homes, unless I move in. He's not going to move into my home. You know?
Right.
I'd have to move into his, and he probably wasn't going to let me. You know. So all these sort of intangible things that put us in the same space logistically, I think in the long run, you know, paid off. And then he was able, he had a big game in game six. And
wow.
And, you know, especially with Shaq. Because if you remember, Larry Bird was the coach and he introduced the Hack-a-Shaq defense. So they kept putting Shaq on the free throw line, and he kept bricking him, serving up bricks.
Right.
You know? And then thankfully he finally fouled out of the game, you know, because he was just so dominant, but he couldn't be dominant because they were fouling him, you know, before he could get in, you know, into a place to score. And so you can't just pull a Shaquille O'Neal out of the game. So he fouled out of the game, which allowed Kobe to become Kobe and do Kobe stuff, and, you know, which won the game in overtime. Crazy, huh?
Incredible. Couldn't write it. Exactly right.
God has to write it. You know.
Oh my gosh.
God's wrote.
That's it's just so fascinating to understand though all those things that had to stack up that way, as you said, that people never would have really recognized happening behind the scenes and that kind of thing. What was the aftermath that off season? Because I've read some stuff where that was the off season where he dabbled in some tap dancing to strengthen the ankle and stuff like that.
Yeah. Kobe would do anything. Okay. if he thought it improved your game, he would do it. I think it was Lynn Swann. If you remember, you're too young to remember Lynn Swann was
Steelers.
Wide receiver for the Steelers. Yeah. And I think Lynn's the one that started taking tap dancing lessons and ballet lessons. And if you ever watch Lynn move, it starts to make sense. I mean, he floated.
Wow.
He's a great athlete. Michael Cooper used to do a lot of, I'm not sure if he did tap dancing, but he did a lot of foot type exercises. His wife used to like throw tennis balls at his feet and stuff, you know what I mean? And
wow.
You know, for footwork. And so, you know, Kobe was a real student and of the game and any aspect on and off the floor. And so I probably didn't even, once he walked out of there, who knew what he was doing, you know?
Well, and you know, it makes, I'm not anybody who's ever even put on a pair of tap shoes, but it does make sense in terms of just the rapid sort of, as you said earlier, dorsiflexion, bringing toes to your nose, and then quick plantar flexion that has to go back and forth in a tap dance mechanism, you know, to strengthen those bones, like you said, the cuboid bone and the long bones of the feet and also the arch and all that stuff. I mean, you have to imagine somebody who's been doing a certain amount of tap dance has pretty developed muscle and bone of the foot and ankle. So it does add up from an orthopedic and from a return to play standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. I would not dissuade any athlete from doing that.
I love it. Gary, this has been incredible. I know it's lunchtime for you at Duke, but until next time, this is, thank you so much. Can you tell listeners where they can get the name of the book and where they can get their hands on it?
Sure. It's 32 years of titles and tiers from the best seat in the house. That's the title. And then there's a subtitle of what I learned about happiness, greatness, leadership. And then I do a last chapter about the evolution of sports medicine, literally go back to like 3,000 years BC with Chinese emperors forcing their subjects to do physical exercise to make them more productive. You know, I had a lot of fun writing that chapter. I don't know, maybe the readers may not. Somebody gave me a really, really good review, but he did say, and then he said, and then he geeks out on sports medicine stuff in the last chapter. So yeah, if you want to get geeked out, okay, and you can just, you know, read the last chapter. But all the other chapters in the book are actual events that happened through my 32-year career that I learned lessons, not from myself, but from the great athletes that I work with. And from learning those lessons, I applied them in my own life. And I tried to trickle them down to my daughters, who eventually referred to them as GV gems. So, you know, most people use the
GV gems.
My girls came up with GV gems, and, you know, something would come up and I would deliver, you know, one of my lines. They look at each other and go, "Now that was a GV gem." So they were usually, you know, usually being facetious and making fun of me. But all the GV gems are in the book. Okay.
I love it. So good. And, oh man, just all the stuff that you had literally that front row seat to, it's so special to go back to and that book brings you back to. So thanks for doing that for this episode, but the book is just where it's all at. So definitely get your hands on it. Thanks, G. I hope you guys get some sunshine and get a little walk after lunch. Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed today's show, and we hope you did, Please give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or whichever platform you listen to podcasts on. And so you never miss a weekly episode, be sure to subscribe and follow. You can find previous episodes on our show website. That's www.basketballstrongpodcast.com. For more basketball performance resources and nagging injury solutions, follow me on Instagram at TDAthletesEdge and follow Phil at PhilWhiteBooks. Until next week's episode, stay basketball strong.